everybody. Welcome to the newest episode of False Starts. I am your host, Chris Shipley, as always, joined by Bill Blank.
Yo.
Billy, what's up, man?
This is it, man. I just said that. Okay, so I just realized that. That was an old man thing I just did right there.
That's the other podcast.
Yeah, so I realized this. I started saying things. It's like that insurance commercial where you become your parents or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I find myself saying things that my dad said my whole life, you know, that you would hear different forms of greetings or whatever. You know, somebody'd say, hey, what are you up to? You know, hey, what's going on? Hey, how are you? Right. And I remember saying, hey, what's going on when I'd see my dad, you know, or somebody else. This is it. I think meaning whatever he was doing at the moment, right. You know? And I was at a barbecue. I was at a 4th of July party, and some friends, a friend of mine's kids, it was, they're like, you know, in their 20s. And one of them was like, hey, what you been up to, Billy? And I was like, this is it. And and he goes, what's that mean? And right then I just went, oh, fuck, I have no idea. I just realized I gave you no information whatsoever in that statement. So I just did it again. Yeah, anyway.
I thought maybe you were going to make a comment on how loud that music is, because every time I play it, I think to myself, I really got to go in there and edit that and turn it down.
Oh, and yeah.
Weeks so later, I forget.
It's like the loud commercials.
I don't remember until we start this show again, so.
Well, you've got 2 weeks to forget about it again.
I know, right? I got a lot of work to do. I got a real job now, so I ain't got time to play around during the day. So
yeah, yet. Yeah. Or at least you're saying that publicly, because somebody at the new job might be watching.
That's right, they might.
You want them to know that you just put your feet up on your desk all day.
Right. Exactly. Listen, let's go ahead and bring in our guest. I'll let you introduce him.
This is one of my best good friends. We have been friends for well over, Jesus,
35 years.
Yeah, we met in fifth grade. Yeah, this is my buddy Ross Peterson. Everybody knows him from KXNO's Morning Rush with Travis Justice. And
we were dogs in the Salvation Army Community Center at basketball. Man. Dude, we were dogs.
And then I was a dog when I started coaching too. I got in trouble. It's the vibe changed.
Hey, Chris, when we played and when we coached. The music.
Yeah.
A couple other things I noticed. Number one, when the little cartoon pops up of the two of you.
Yeah.
Bill's the doctor.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can't really control AI. That's an AI image. Also, you can tell I've lost a lot of weight in that picture. I look pretty good in that picture. The beard's on point.
And then that clip pops up of Bill doing stand-up comedy. I was probably there that night, because that was another 20 years ago or something.
Yeah, that's really old. That might be the first video that ever went on YouTube of me.
We talked about this 2 weeks ago. We need some new headshots and some new stuff. So
I was there, Chris, the first night that Bill Blank went on stage. I was at Billy Joe's picture show for the Rob Rivera Comedy Challenge. I'm telling you, such great memories, man. We had that was just
a moment in time, man. That's very precious.
Man, to be in touch with so many young creative people that were trying new stuff. It was one of my favorite moments in time. And it lasted for several years, where we would meet out there on Wednesday nights. Is that right?
Yeah, I want to say it was every other Tuesday. Kind of like this show.
Yeah. and a group of local comics. I mean, and you'd bring your buddies. You know what I mean? There weren't 50 people in this room.
Right.
And I saw some of the most brilliant creative things I ever have experienced in my life. I've been around a lot of creative, fun stuff, man. It was an awesome point in time.
Yeah, so Rob really fostered an environment of like And it ended up, there were times there towards the end where it was a packed house every
year. Oh, you know, yeah.
Several months it built. He had that kid that would play guitar, like play metal music just by himself on the other stage. Do you remember that?
Well, Bill, you would have more of the memories of these guys' names. And once you started rattling them off, I could probably do some of their bits that were.
Oh, yeah. Bits. Yeah. Names. I mean, I'm more like, it was just such a variety. Like he would always have the screaming idiot go up right before me. And this guy was, they called him the screaming idiot. He wasn't a comic at all. He just, I think he was friends with Rob from work, or I don't know, but he was there. He was an audience member that was there all the time. And he just started going on stage and screaming into the mic for, I don't know, a minute and a half. And he would just get off stage, he'd just send her, "Hey, it's the screaming idiot." And he'd just walk up and go, "Ah!"
Bill, who was the guy that used to carry the ball bat on stage?
That was Todd Endor.
Todd Endor. Funny guy. Funny.
Yeah,
guy.
He was so nervous that he
was so nervous
he carried a bat to make him feel more secure.
It was great. I'm telling you, it was like, I watch these Kill Tony bits now, Bill. You know what I mean? The Kill Tony thing.
I know it a little bit, yeah.
It kind of reminds me of it. Some guys get up there and do a minute. Some guys get up there and do 5 minutes. Yeah. And then every now and again, somebody hits a roll and they're going for 15 minutes and they own the room. And it's a moment. Everybody there loves it. So,
yeah.
Love
it. It was, so, there were, you talk about mental health. I mean, that's an open mic, a steady open mic. You get some characters, man. You definitely get some people that need to work some shit out. Like, Teehees is doing a very regular open mic now. And they are fostering an environment of creativity there that I love to be around. I love going down there and just honestly eating a dick, dude. Like, I love going to open mics there and going on stage and just sucking. And I don't mean that like it's on purpose, but it's like, I just love that I can. Like, I don't have to, it humbles me in a way where it lets me know I'm not done working. Like, it lets me know that I can't just walk up there
and rest on
my Lord. Yeah. I mean, the thing about an open mic is you've got such a smaller amount of time where you don't, if you're trying new stuff, you don't get, when you try new stuff at an open mic, you don't get to bookend it. Like if I'm just emceeing at the Funny Bone and I'm doing a 15 minute set up front, I can try something new in the middle in there and have it not really go all that well. And I didn't suck. And like, I got laughs right after it, right before it. Audience trusted me. So that helped even with that new thing. You go to an open mic and it's 3 to 5 minutes of just, you're committed to doing brand new shit with nothing else around it.
It is the best.
Yeah.
It
is, and it's invigorating in a way.
Some of my most fun memories of all time are just open mics and watching people bomb, watching people go up for the only time they go up there. And it's not like you're not laughing at them as embarrassment and like, haha, this is somebody that's trying a dream.
It's the adrenaline
concentrated life, dude. It's so cool.
The adrenaline that they have.
It's
gotta be, you know, for sure. Now, did I hear you once say that you either wrote comedy or that you were part of a comedy? I could have sworn I heard you say that on the radio one
day. Okay. Yes.
We're going off on a tangent now, that's which right. is what we do on this show, Ross, by the
right.
way.
Hey, I'm on board, man. This is what I signed up for. I was a part of a comedy troupe called the Banana Punch, and it was a sketch comedy troupe. It was not stand-up like Bill and several of my friends have done. This was all written by a genius of a guy named John Donovan. And Dono's skill set is not stand-up comedy. He's done stand-up and he's done well with it, but his real talent, this guy should have written for SNL. Absolutely brilliant guy. Hundreds of skits that this guy has written over his life, or sketches, as what he would refer to them as. But I'm like, just hilarious stuff. One of them was two announcers calling a baseball game, and everything is sponsored in the game. And he wrote this 10, 15 years ago before the temperature on the field was sponsored.
Sure, right.
It's a real thing now. It's a real thing. But every single thing, you know, the windup was brought to you by a watch company. It was so brilliant. So brilliant. That is so great. That was what I was a part of and loved that. And that was, you know, to the mental health thing, man, some of my, again, really happy times when you get to be creative and you get to forget about whatever the problems are in your life. And Bill and I have both been very lucky to be able to not only do that, we still get to do that. Me on a daily basis with the radio show, Bill with his comedy. You know, we still get a chance to have that outlet to be creative and be around fun, creative people, which somehow lets your brain forget about the worries of your day. And I wish and hope everybody has something like that, that they kind of get to tune out to this, the noise that maybe we're creating in our own head, or that's just, you know, that cacophony of life around us.
Well, that's part of the story that we've kind of told here this last year with Bill's story and my story of what we've kind of worked through this last year. And for me, it was exactly what you're talking about. This little entity that we have going on here at Three Beards Media, as small and tiny as it is, would give me a lot of pleasure every day of creating a video or working on some graphics or whatever. And it was just one thing that I always felt like I didn't have any stress, and it was my creative outlet, and it made me proud of something that I was doing.
Yeah. It let you forget about that other stuff, even if it was for a moment. Right.
Absolutely.
Well, and there's always people that are going to treat you as if you're delusional. And I feel sorry for them. Because
what do you mean by that, Bill?
Well, like Chris said, as small as it is, you know, and it's tiny, and the fact that he feels the need to qualify it with that,
I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Let everybody know, hey, I'm not getting ahead of myself. I'm not trying to, you know what I mean? Like, this is one of those things that people will hate on you for putting effort into.
Right.
You know?
Oh, I love that, Bill.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't tell you how many times I've gotten insulted by saying something like, well, why don't you talk about it on your podcast? And I just want to go, that's not really the insult that you think it is. You know? Like, I'm not sure what's supposed to be insulting about that.
Well, it's like you have to, you know, we're all aware that anybody can have a podcast. We're all aware that StreamYard is a website that you can use and do this right now. Everybody's aware. So it's not like I remember one time going to doing a show in a small town. This was years ago, obviously. And someone on the sign in the, it was like a bowling alley. And on the sign, it said Bill Blank, and it said like, see him on YouTube or whatever. And people legitimately were like, oh, you're on YouTube? And I was like, oh, you don't know that anybody can just put something on YouTube? Like, it's just, it's insanity to think about. And so, because of that, most people know that, if you put any amount of effort into making it some kind of quality product, people think you're stupid, or they tell you you are, which most of the time is an excuse for them not ever trying anything.
Right. Well, listen, Ross, we could certainly talk about contrails and wind chills and how much bullshit wind chill is, but we actually brought you on here for a different reason. So
wait a minute. What bullshit wind chill is? What's that?
Don't even get me started on that.
Wind chill is bullshit though, Bill.
It is bullshit. It is. Why? It's a total made up science.
Okay.
But dude, I'm not going down this road.
I mean, the basic point is, if it feels like 20 below, it's 20 below.
Thank you very much, Ross. That's all I've been saying for years.
But wait a minute. But if you put a thermometer outside and it doesn't say 20 below, but it feels like it's 20 below,
it's 20 below
because of the wind.
What's this? You know what we should call
wind chill? But it's not 20 below.
You know what we should call wind chill? We should call wind chill skin temperature.
That's right.
That's fucking right. Perfect.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
What's the temperature on your skin? You know, what matters? What's
you know what, Ross, you know what really matters? How cold I feel. That's what matters. So if it's minus 20, it's minus 20. I finally found somebody that agrees with me. I can't tell you. I've been carrying this torch for
I feel like this is a weird hill to die on.
I've died on way weirder hills.
Dude, don't even get me started on the groundhog. That's a whole another fucking subject.
Well, so, whether or not that's real, the shadow?
No, if he sees his shadow, I would think that means spring's coming. It's all backwards. It's all backwards.
Why? I don't want to hear about shining for a shadow.
Yes.
I don't want to hear you do believe in groundhogs.
What's that? Yes. Yes. But I know exist. Those are real. Yes. That's the only part of that story I believe in.
That'd be better if he was like, no, man, they're like the chupacabra.
Yeah.
Prove it. Prove it. You got one? Show it to me.
Hey, you want to go snipe hunting?
I did that.
Okay. Go ahead, Chris.
That's all right.
I know you were trying to transition.
I was trying to transition. Again, I'm not very good at this. So.
Well, no, you're trying to manage a fucking circus right now. Like, I get it.
Good luck.
Right. I know.
I know
the least experienced person on this podcast. So
I know what I am to deal with. But see, that's.
I don't know what idiot there is. The idiot that put me in charge or you know.
Or you're the idiot.
I'm not sure which one. So
for allowing.
Right. For allowing myself to be in charge.
Well, but.
We have gone off the rails. We're 17 minutes in already. We're off the rails.
But this is the time to go off the rails. It's. Like in this situation, you want to go off the rails early and then you get into the heavy.
That's correct.
Shit.
That's correct.
It's not like it's the opposite of like the Little Miss Sunshine. Did you see Little Miss Sunshine?
Never seen it.
Yeah. Oh, you're doing yourself a disservice. You should watch Little Miss Sunshine. It's fantastic.
That's my homework.
Alan Alda is one of the greatest movie characters of all time in Little Miss Sunshine. He's in a nursing home and they go get him for this trip. He's grandpa or whatever. And he's on his way out. Well, he got in trouble. And I think he gets in trouble in the nursing home because he's doing heroin.
Yeah.
And, and the guy's like, Dad, you can't, you're 80 years old. You can't do heroin. He goes, no, this is exactly what I should do heroin. I'm 80 goddamn years old. I should be doing all of this shit now.
Reminds me of a bit our buddy Josh Alton used to do at Rob Rivera's Comedy Challenge, talking about how he couldn't wait till he retired because then he could try all the really good drugs because he had no other responsibilities.
Yeah.
Denny's correct. There's never a time we're on the rails around here.
Sorry, Denny.
Totally. It's all right. So the reason that we brought you on, Ross, and I don't think you talk about it very much publicly. And I wasn't even aware of it until Bill had told me a while ago, but all three of us at one point in our life have gone through a divorce. And part of the reason why I wanted to bring this up was because I was looking for things to relate to other guys about that. They may not realize what some of that stuff does. You hear a lot about, and you should, single moms and what they go through. And I think that it sometimes isn't talked about what single dads go through and how they grieve through losing a marriage and making a change and things like that. So, I guess we'll kind of get started with this. I was reading an article today, about why divorce is harder for men than women. Now, I don't know where they quantify that. Like I'm not a woman, so I have no idea what that is like.
It's like a survey or something. Like it's not necessarily
right.
The gospel. It's just somebody's point of view. But anyway, it's probably from a psychologist or something.
Right. So we'll just jump off with that question.
Yeah.
Why, or do you think that divorce might be harder for men than women, and why?
I think there's probably discretion on that.
Right.
You know, the it seems like with divorce, each person that I've talked to has been so completely different. Each situation is so different. And Bill and I both are guys that are very much open books, and we talk to as many of our friends as we can about stuff when we're going through it. And reaching out to guys that had been through divorce was something that I intentionally did to ask these questions. Like, man, what do I need to be looking out for? And not like, not the legal advice of going through the divorce. That wasn't sure. part of it, but it was this stuff. You know, what am I going to be dealing with mentally? When did you crash? And man, I had some horrible, horrible days where I was locked.
What do I do about this crazy bitch?
Totally.
No, I know what you mean. I didn't mean to imply that you called me saying that, but I'm just saying like all the things.
Yeah.
All the
things. Yes. Dude, what happened with me was I found myself rudderless. Okay. I there were times when I would stand in my living room and I didn't know which step to take, very literally. I'd be an hour stuck in one spot, standing there. Sometimes I'd be crying. Sometimes an hour would disappear, man. And then, sometimes I would like snap into consciousness in weird places. None of those sounds weird, but like, I remember a day when I don't know how, all of a sudden I was in a Quick Star on the east side of Des Moines. And I remember thinking like, what am I doing here? And I got some food and I went out to my truck and I sat in that parking lot and cried for an hour, bawled. I didn't know what to do. Your identity is not just being that dad that you still are, but it was being that husband that you no longer are. I'm just going to ramble for a little while here.
I was going to go there if you didn't.
Right. Cause what you're saying is resonating.
The whole thing is definitely a thing.
For the longest time you were Ross and Aaron.
I was
Chris and Tracy. And that's who we were.
This is something Bill and I have talked about a lot. You know, when you announce to people that you are anything, when you announce to your circle that you're married, that you're an accountant, that you're a comedian, that you're a radio guy, right? And then all of a sudden you're not that thing anymore. That hurts, man. Your identity is challenged. Now, most people, they don't consider themselves to be Chris the electrician. They don't consider themselves to be Ryan the FedEx guy, right? They're Ryan, they're Chris, mm-hmm. they're Bill. This thing happens though when you announce it to the world. When you're really, and not that those guys aren't proud of those jobs, they should be, and you hope you're proud of whatever work you do. But man, when all of a sudden you're not that thing anymore, that's hard. That's what causes that thing, I think, where you are rudderless. It's hard to know which way to go. And I don't want to dwell in that pity city thing that we all visited, right? And I learned, right. I got so full of cliches in the last year. So full of cliches. One of them was, you can visit pity city, you can't live there.
Yeah.
And Bill and I would talk about that. Like, man, when I was having bad days, sometimes I'd call Bill, he'd call me. I had a couple of friends that had this knack for reaching out to me in those moments. Josh Fisher, who spent many years with the Iowa Wild and then was with Hy-Vee for a while, now has his own advertising company. Josh was one of those guys. And I'm lucky to have a huge network of friends and family. And I guess that's something I would also tell people. Reach, if you know somebody that's going through something like this, reach out to them. Send them a text that says, I'm thinking about you. You don't have to respond because I know shit's heavy.
Right.
And if you don't want to respond right now, don't. But know that I'm thinking about you and know that people love you and know that you got this, man. Here's another cliche. You are bigger than your problems. You are stronger than those problems. You have so much more than this stuff that's weighing your life down. And I've, dude, tonight, I am so much of a better man right now than I was a year and a half ago. I'm 10 times the dad. Part of that is disappointing to me, Chris. Part of that is, it's disappointing. I get it. That I wasn't this man for the last 20 years.
100% agree.
You know, I feel bad, that I didn't give my ex-wife this version of me.
Yes.
And, but the truth is this guy didn't exist. He didn't exist. You had to, again, another cliche. I had to kill that old me to let this guy come out. And, you know, glad I did it is not the right way to say it, but I went through it.
I'll jump in here and tell you 100% what you just said is what I felt going through mine. I'm the one that initiated the divorce, and I can't tell you how many times I cried and cried because I thought I was tearing my family apart. Yeah. But I knew somewhere on the other side, I was going to be a better father because I wasn't miserable every day. And I will tell you that my daughter, Caitlin, her and I are very, very close. And about 2 weeks ago, she's having trouble with her mom. They don't get along. And she sent me this long list of things. It was like a list of things that her mom disappointed her in. And all these things that I did not know that had happened. And I just, my only response was, as I texted her and I said, I'm so sorry that I wasn't a better dad, that I didn't see those things. Mm-hmm. And it puts you in perspective and it makes you really look at yourself and make a change on it. It really does.
Well, I think that at some point you're so focused on your marriage working and making sure you're kind of under the impression that if you just love your wife, everything else falls into place. Like, you know, I remember someone telling me a kind of a cliche, like the best favor you can ever do for your children is love their mother. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, because I've been on both sides of divorce. I've been the one that left. I've been through two now. I've been the one that left and the one that got left. And the first one, the mother of my son, that's, you know, I left. That was the reason that I left that marriage, was I did not love his mom, and I knew it. Hmm. And I knew that was going to be bad in the long run. The house was already toxic. There was just no love in the house. There was no warmth there. Yeah. And that was my fault because I didn't love his mom. He loved me. But, you know, that made everything harder going forward because she held that against me forever. I think still does, honestly.
Bill,
you know, I feel she's still angry at me for not loving her.
Can we go back to that first question that Chris asked? And because you've been through two, like that, I don't even know if that happiness is the right word or what, or you initiated one. Mm-hmm. The other one was initiated by your ex-wife.
Mm-hmm.
The discretion thing that I was wondering, that like my first thought on that was, I'm betting the person that initiates it is, they're able to move on faster.
Yeah, I believe that. Right? Yeah, most of the time.
I'm just wondering if that's that happiness thing, because I do believe most divorces are initiated by women. I don't know the stats on that. I'm just going off of, again, most of my experiences. I wonder, Chris, if that's not what a part of that stat is.
To put it simply, to make it a fucking, you know, a mansplain, I think women initiate it the most because they know they can just go get laid whenever they want. Yeah, at the end of the day. Like, at the end of the day.
That's it.
A woman, I'm just saying, the vagina has way more power than the penis.
Totally agree.
I don't know that anybody's disagreeing with that.
And so, like, a woman, almost any woman, regardless of what she looks like, I mean, she would have to just be rancid, reeking of something, looking like Honey Boo Boo's mom, like the before version, and she could, and like, for her to not be able to walk into a bar and just be like, hey, I want somebody to fuck me, and somebody will raise their hand. I promise. Every single time, if she's got a fucking hole, period. And dudes can't do that.
This is, folks, in the psychological courses, this is what they call projection. Bill is taking what motivates him on a day-to-day basis.
I'm saying that is a way to explain why women are the ones that leave the most. I'm not sure
that's right.
Because here's the thing. When you're the one that leaves, that means you usually are the one with more self-confidence in that situation. Thank you, Drew. Thank you, Drew. I'm like Derek from New Sharon. I'm saying this stuff nobody else wants to talk about. It's what I feel like.
And we're going to let it go.
No, but I'm saying, like, usually the one who's leaving, and I would also venture to say this is something that you could probably look up percentage-wise. Usually whoever's leaving has somebody in their back pocket. I would say that happens probably 60% of the time. Most people, I don't think, make the decision to leave to be alone. I think they have a prospect. And
I mean, I'm in Chris's boat here. And I didn't, that wasn't my case at all.
It wasn't. Yeah.
No.
I'm merely commenting on so that one statistic that got thrown out, and I think that explains it.
So what in this article,
untrained opinion,
part of they do talk about that men tend to move on too fast. Oh. And I will say, I didn't have somebody in my back pocket, but I did, after getting divorced, within a few months, meet somebody and moved way too fast, because I fell in love with this dream of
rebound.
Right. And yeah, she was telling me everything I needed to hear. And I'm not proud of it. Within a couple months, she had moved in with me and my kids. And I was like that. And after a couple months, I realized what a disaster that was.
Oh yeah. That was a bad decision.
But I think that's true for a lot of men. I think they move on too fast. And not necessarily in your case, Ross, but no, it was.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right, because like I just said, a man just can't walk into a bar and do that.
It says most men,
but men are also less likely to commit, I think, statistically, aren't they?
Maybe.
But I would say immediately following a divorce, especially if you didn't want it.
Yes.
That would make sense.
I would think so. Yeah.
But I mean, I can tell you after my, here's a difference. When I left, I got laid within like a week or two. That was it, though.
That's pretty quick.
So yeah, Bill walked into a bar and said, right, I've got one stick. Right. Who wants it?
I'll tell you what happened.
Ross and I were thinking the same thing. He's the one
I had a show. This is a fucking crazy story, dude. I don't know if we want to. So,
oh, God.
Ross, do you remember the Fry Man? Did you ever hear about the Fry Man?
Now, are you talking about Joel Fry?
No. Fry Man from St. Louis. The Fry Man.
No.
Emil Fry was his name. He's a comic.
Okay.
Fucking lunatic, this guy. Lunatic. Loved him, but he had his demons.
Yeah.
And he died a while back. Anyway, him and I were friends for a bit because I loved the lunacy. He made me laugh. One time we ate shrooms and went to a strip club, and it was fucking hilarious. We had to leave. Like, I just started peeking, and this girl goes up, and she was like a bigger girl, you know? And she had she had like the white cotton panties on and bra when she got up there. And Fryman looks at me and goes, she's wearing my underwear, and I fucking lost it. And you can't laugh like that in a strip club. Like, you can't be sitting there laughing like that while girls are taking their clothes off. So we left because I was crying. I couldn't fucking stop. I had a show in St. Louis on Valentine's Day with him. And there was a girl in the audience with her mom, and she was gorgeous. And I just started hitting on her on stage because it's Valentine's Day and she's there by herself. So one thing led to another after the show, and Fry Man took off with her mom to do like meth or crack or something. So got her mom away, and yeah. And like, yeah, she came and saw me a couple weeks later, but that it didn't last. I mean, nothing, you know. But that was leaving, right?
Yeah.
I was done. So if you leave, you were done way before you actually left.
Okay, so right? Drew brings up a good point here. I wouldn't necessarily say prospect, but initiator definitely goes in with a plan, having a natural advantage in the legal game. And I would say that that's 100% true.
Yeah. Now, second marriage, I was devastated. It was an up and down marriage from almost the jump. I mean, after a few years, we separated for like 7 months, got back together. Like 3 months later, separated again for a few months, got back together, and then 7 years went by, and she basically repeated the same behavior, but a little bit worse. I was devastated. My dick wouldn't get hard for probably 3 months. So that's the difference. Also, I was in my 20s the first time.
Oh, Bill.
but I mean, for real though, like I was trying, because that was always how I rebounded any relationship, you know. Like, I was engaged when I was 19, caught that girl in bed with a chick, and like, you know, all that. I went to jail over that and like all kinds of shit, right? So I got laid as quickly as possible. Made me,
man, that bad. Sounds awful. What did you say her name was?
Well, she's dead. So I win.
Well, Jesus.
No,
that just killed the momentum of the.
What momentum? Fuck
right,
that.
Teddy. Racial. Ross Peterson's facial expressions don't right fucking, now are worth the price.
What's up, Teddy? How you been, buddy?
You don't fucking
100%.
Listen, man. Karma gets people. I don't know. Cheating's cheating. It wasn't like I was invited. Like, there was no fucking conversation. Nobody, like, we didn't go, hey, let's bring another girl in. You know, I might have been down for that.
Bill, is your first wife really dead?
No, not my first wife. The girl I was engaged to that I caught in bed with a chick.
She's really dead.
Yes. Yes.
I Ross, you're a professional here. I don't even know how to transition from that.
My dad. It was funny. So when it happened, I was on the road. I was in Michigan. I was in the UP of Michigan, just driving on these back, just horrible, you know, middle of nowhere roads. And my dad calls me and he goes, hey, and this, I mean, it had been, I don't know, 5-6 years since it happened. But she put me through the ringer. She took me to court, all kinds of just crazy shit. Anyway, so he called and was like, hey, so-and-so died. And blah, blah, blah. And he goes, I just thought I'd tell you so you didn't read it in the paper or something. I didn't know how you'd feel about it. And I was like, how do I feel about it? I was like, I win. And my dad was like, whoa.
Yeah.
I'm just...
Bill, when did you play that casino in Grand Rapids when you're on that trip through Michigan?
No, I was in the UP. So yeah, that was like, but yes, casinos. It was like Sault Ste. Marie and some other. There was a little run up there. They were fucking horrible gigs, but they took really good care of you. Like, you just ate like a king and all that stuff for free. Like, you just got carte blanche on everything.
I went on a tour with Alton one time, one of our good friends, Chris, that also did stand-up comedy for a long time. I went on a tour with him one time that where we went around Lake Michigan. He performed around Lake Michigan. I was a roadie.
But anyway, so I'm sorry that I completely digressed there.
Left turn, dude.
It was worth the price of
admission. But that's the point. Like, that's the difference between leaving and being left, in my opinion. Like, at least that was my experience. Now, you know, like Ross said, though, every situation is different. I think at the crux of it, though, I think you can kind of go in one direction or the other. Like, sometimes it's not a choice, though. There are divorces out there that something happens where it's like you kind of have to. Like, they commit a crime. They do, you know, they destroy you financially. They,
you know,
I've seen marriages that I can't believe made it through some things, like, especially like financial ruin. Like, you know, I'm not going to out people, but I know people that had horrible gambling issues and just, you know, took everything to the cleaners. It's like, well, anything that breaks trust, makes a marriage. It's very hard to overcome broken trust.
I think there are some other things that can happen, you know, Bill, I think breaking trust is the number one thing that happens that causes divorce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen personal tragedy, you know, losing a child or something like that, that can be enough.
Yeah.
I can see that, you know, the divorce was, I look at the divorce a lot like, losing my mom. I lost my mom to cancer in 2020.
Yes. It's a grieving process.
It is. It very much is. And I'm glad that I still have my ex-wife around. I'm glad that she's still here and her and I, our relationship is good right now. We communicate really well. But man, it has so many similarities to that grieving process that I went through with my mom. And again, same things, some of the same things, some of those same cliches. I learned I was a lot stronger than I thought. I depended on my mom for a lot. I was a mama's boy. My dad depended on my mom a lot, and my dad was in poor health. So we all thought my dad would pass away long before my mom. My dad's still alive. He's kicking butt. He's doing really good right now.
Mm-hmm.
A lot like the divorce. You know, if you would have stopped me a week into that process of either losing my mom or getting a divorce, and you just said, "Hey, Ross, what's the next year going to be like?" I'd have said, "Man, in a year from now, I'm going to be a shell of myself."
Right.
I'm moving in the wrong direction. I'm falling apart. I can't do this. And a year later, if I could have talked to that person, that guy would have said, "Dude, you got this.
Yeah.
You not only got this, you are going to be amazed at what you're going to find when you really break into the toolbox here." And I try to tell people that all the time that are going through this, like, man, today sucks. And you're going to have more cliches here, boys. You're going to have a lot of bad days. And I got to the point, and Bill knows this, I told him this. When I had a bad day, I would literally look in the mirror at the end of the day, about this time at night. I'd get Audrey to bed, and I'd go look in the mirror, and I would literally say, "There's one less bad day. I don't know how many bad days I'm going to have, but I know they're finite. I know that it's a limited number, and I have one less. I just got one under my belt." And tomorrow,
well, how long were you begging? I remember, like, you say one less bad day, and that's a similar version of, like, in the beginning, I was always saying to I just want one good day.
Yeah.
Like, one moment of really good levity that I had going through the second divorce, was I was at a party with my brother and a couple other friends. And, you know, this was I mean, it was 4th of July and she left July 1st. So this was 3 days
raw. Later.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but we lived, I mean, she filed in April. We lived in the same house till July. It was torture. So I just remember saying at one point, sitting there going, I had tears and I'm like, I just want to have one good day. I just want one good day. And my brother was like, well, we could be having one right now if you just shut the fuck up.
Oh Jesus!
And broke.
Sometimes that's what you need, though. Yes. Now, yes. Sometimes that's what you need. You need somebody to go, "Hey, snap the fuck out of it."
Yeah.
You know, you're gonna be fine. Yeah. You know.
Time to put on your big boy pants, man. Yes. Time to do big boy shit. Let's go.
Yeah.
And listen, that takes a brother, a best friend,
yep,
a dad. It takes somebody that loves you to be able to talk to you in that way, and not say those words. It could be a lot of people that say those words. I mean, to talk to you,
right? Yeah.
If get somebody else said those bullshit things to Bill, it's he's not remembering that years right later.
Yeah,
brother yeah says that, and you go, this guy yeah knows me. This guy knows me, yeah, and this guy knows that I can do the good day thing, and I yeah can be fun. And yeah, sitting around and crying, and again, Bill, 3 days into it, a couple like that. You got a lot more bad days ahead of you in the next 90 than good days.
Oh yeah. Right? Oh yeah.
But man, I really did learn to turn that thing around. And when I was having a shitty day, I would look forward to that moment because I told myself I was going to do that. I'm going to look myself in the eye at the end of the day and I'm going to go, "Hey man, high five. Way to go. One less bad day." One second.
That's right. You know what? We're going to take a break. This is a good time to take a break, and then we'll come yeah back and we'll continue with the conversation with Ross Peterson.
Why take the best corn in the world and make it into fuel when you could make it into whiskey? That's the question that launched Rebelton, Iowa's most visible and fastest growing distillery. Owners Rob and Christy Taylor embrace the grain-to-glass philosophy, sourcing ingredients locally and overseeing on-premises production and bottling at their facility in Osceola. One sip, and you'll agree that Rebelton's handcrafted whiskeys, gins, and vodkas are the best you've ever tasted. And with the launch of their rye whiskey, made with 100% Iowa-grown rye and corn, and their new bourbon coming soon, there's more Rebelton to love than ever. Iowa's own Rebelton Distillery. RebeltonDistillery.com.
All right, and we're back. Go ahead.
Ross left because Audrey probably he's probably in there reading a whole book right now. We're going to have to do the whole.
You know what? You gotta do what you gotta do.
He's in there reading. I do have to clarify because I was talking about the, you know, most people when they leave, I feel like they have some kind of prospect. They have I didn't have any prospects when I left.
Right.
I actually was kind of purposeful about not having any. Yeah. For me, it was more, I just knew that my son would grow up never respecting his mom.
Right.
Because all we did was fight. Right. I mean, by the time I left, I mean, we pretty much fought every day. And if you can imagine what that looks like to a little kid, like if it's like loud, you know, and it's like, you know, going back and forth all the time, you know, the dad is obviously going to look like the one who is yelling at mom and
right
looks like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like dad becomes the bad guy.
Right.
And so I just knew that if I didn't leave, I'd forever be the bad guy in the house and it would just be unhealthy. He would never respect his mother. He wouldn't respect women in turn because he right never respected his mom. And it would be because he watched his dad never respect his mom right because I couldn't fucking stand her. That's right why I left. I mean,
well, and that's, I think that might be kind of what you said earlier, though, Bill, about, you know, you show your sons by how you love their mother.
Yeah. But
in a way, it's more like how you treat them. Mm-hmm. You knew that that was a toxic relationship, and you knew you were not going to be able to not treat her terribly.
Right.
So it was best to be away from that.
Right.
I think we all had different reasons for the divorce or whatever else. I can tell you, for me, I felt we were growing apart early on, and there were certain things that I wanted to change in my life for the better that she just didn't want to come along with. And at some point, that might sound selfish, but I knew that there was a better life and a better way for us to raise our kids and a better life for our kids to have. We had to make some certain changes, and she just wasn't on board with that.
Yeah, I mean, there was a cliche one of my friends told me a long time ago while I was going through my divorce, and it made a lot of sense. I think what you said is kind of the opposite of it, but he said, men leave women because they change, and women leave men because they don't. And I was thinking about it, and I think that made a lot of sense, kind of, you know, looking back retrospectively. Like my second marriage, I was the same person in the end as I was in the beginning. And I resented her for leaving the man that she married, because I didn't change. She's the one that changed. I didn't change, you know, but she didn't necessarily change who she was. She more so changed what was okay out of me. Like, you know, so it was like, I don't know, all these things that were a big nothing burger all of a sudden were what were making or breaking the marriage. And it was just like, that's just somebody who's got their mind made up to find a reason to leave.
Yeah.
But I don't know, you know, I just know that going through everything the second time around was much worse. Gives me a lot more empathy for my son's mom. Because she, I'm sure that it was pretty tough on her.
She probably went through a lot of those same emotions and experiences that you did this second.
Yeah, time. Exactly. Yeah. And you know, to know that I in a sense made someone feel that way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to say that I feel guilty about that. It would be disingenuous, because I don't really feel guilt for it, because it was the right thing to do. I just feel empathy, I guess. Like, I think a lot of divorce and a lot of relationships ending in general, just, I think you feel like you were wrong about something. Like, in the end, I think some of that, like, wow, I picked this person and they're not who I thought they were. Like, it's almost like an ego crushing thing where,
Bill, it's that thing of I'm no longer that thing I told everybody I was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we had talked about, I remember early on in the podcast, I think maybe it was when Sean was on, that I was talking about how when I was going through that second divorce, there were times where I was thinking about how 20 some year old me would be so pissed off at me right now. Like, I went backwards. Like, what the fuck? Like, 25 year old me would have never put up with any of this shit. I would have been the one that left. I would have, you know what I mean? Like, all that. And then I was like, well, but that guy doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
That guy didn't live enough life to feel the way I feel right now. Like, so I can't be mad that I'm not that guy anymore, because everything that happened between then and now couldn't have happened. That would mean I didn't grow at all. Like, nothing about me matured, changed, anything, you know? So,
Bill, did you find it hard? And maybe, I mean, you and I, we were in way different. Chris asked at the very beginning about kind of talking about this publicly, which I didn't. I talked about it one time on the air when the divorce was finalized. I basically said, you know, I've been very open and public about having a wife, and now people are going to see me out and about without my wife, and maybe even with other women or another woman or something. And I wanted people just to know that that was the situation I was in. You know,
so them hens ain't out there clucking.
I think that there are similarities, but some huge differences in what Bill and I, similarities. Having to shut off that emotion and turn on your show, turn on your game, turn on your act, which is what it was. Yeah. And in radio, especially and I think in stand-up comedy, I've noticed this too. You have to be vulnerable. You have to be vulnerable. You can't do it if you're guarded. You can't do it if you're lying, because people see through it. You know, Bill and I, one of the double-edged swords is also in what Bill and I do is we grew up here. So people know us. So we can't bullshit.
Right.
I can't go on the air and pretend to be some cool guy. My friends know I'm a nerd. I can't go on the air and pretend to be some tough guy. They know I'm a pussy. So you have to be honest. And so I think that Bill and I went through a similar thing in that we're going through this super heavy emotional shit. It's consuming your brain. It's consuming your life. And then all of a sudden, guess what? Curtain goes up.
Right.
The show must go on is a very real thing.
Yep.
And you have two options. One is stop doing what you do. Announce to the world that you're no longer Bill Blank the comedian, that you're no longer Ross on the radio, or find the fucking tools in the toolbox. Yeah. Find out you're bigger than your problems. Do the thing. Like, it's the Dory thing. Another cliche. Just keep swimming, man. You got to keep swimming.
Well, but another difference is you had to do it every day. I had the ability to curl up in a ball and not do a show for a long time or something. You know,
I also have two guys on the radio with me who knew what I was going through and were there to lift me up.
Right.
Hold me up the whole time. Shawnee Roberts is listening right now, man. Sean, one of those guys that was there to help
you just it is. It's true. Yeah. You just keep going. I mean, Sean has been through breakups and stuff while he was on the air. Like, it's
very public.
There's a certain amount of professionalism you have to have, believe it or not. As fun as it all sounds, like, you know, as a comic, obviously that's a fun thing. You know, from the outside looking in, it looks like I have this fun job and I'm the fun haver. I'm the leader of the fun time when I'm on stage. So, like, if I can't be the leader of the fun time while I'm on stage, then I shouldn't be getting paid to be there. So in a way, you know, when you're going through something major, you know, how does a guy drive his forklift when he's going through some shit?
Right.
You know, I mean, in a way, it's just kind of, luckily we do have an autopilot switch.
Bill, that's that thing of coming to consciousness at Quickstart.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
Right. But, yeah.
You know, you're right.
You may not even remember half of those shows.
I don't.
And the difference is I could go to my cubicle every day and I wasn't publicly talking to anybody. And if I needed to take a 15-minute break because I was sad or whatever, I could do that. The difference for Ross, for you, I think, and Sean popping in here kind of reminded me of this is the reason that you guys are so, I think, successful at KXNO is because you've treated your listeners like they're your friends. You've been open about your life. That's why everybody went to bat for you when you lost your jobs.
Right.
So when you live your life so open for everybody, that's a hard thing for you to do when you've got some personal tragedy to go through. You know, you talked about, you know, your unfortunate passing of your mom, which, you know, touched me. And I remember that. And I remember you talking about it on Old Man Strength. And you've been open about your life. And to not be open about that was really probably a little hard.
It was really hard. And not the I want to vent type of thing. I need to be honest, because there were a few people, man, there were a handful of listeners, and I can, without without going back and looking at them, I can almost guarantee it was all guys that were in our exact position that we're talking about. They picked up on the signs. They saw it. They heard it, whatever it was. And I had a few guys that would send, I'd get a Facebook message about once every month and a half, every 2 months, that would just say, hey man, I'm not sure that you're going through this thing, but I'm picking up on all the indicators that you are. And I want to let you know, the only reason I'm picking up on them is because I was putting out those indicators.
Sure.
It takes one to know one type of thing. And I was grateful. I was super grateful for those people because they did it with a lot of tact and couth to say you're doing well. And then when I did finally announce that it was that it was done, I had a lot of people that reach out that said, man, I had no idea. And I thought, good.
Yeah.
I didn't want to know about it.
I remember I had a moment, one of those moments with Ross. I had ran into Ross's ex-wife at the grocery store. And this was, they were still, I don't know that it was final yet, even at that time. And I remember that. And I remember thinking to myself, because I had just been through it. And like Ross said, we know a lot of people. So people see stuff, they tell us, they hear stuff, they tell us. And I remember thinking to myself, okay, I'm not going to tell Ross about this for at least a couple weeks. And that's what I did.
Cause you'd been in my position.
Yeah.
You knew how that, you know, it just,
yep.
There was nothing. It wasn't like you saw her with a man or you just saw her at the grocery store. I think you guys said hi to each other because she loves you. You love Aaron.
Yeah.
You guys, you're friends. You said hi to each other. And yeah, you waited a couple weeks and you called and you said, hey, man, I just wanted to let you know because.
And I'm like, I waited because I didn't want to be the, hey, guess what? Yeah.
Right.
Because had I not been through what I went through, I probably would have been that. I would have called immediately from the parking lot and it would have been almost a gossipy thing.
Yeah.
But I know through experience that that wasn't going to make Ross feel better if I did that, because people had done that to me. And while I know it came from a good place and they care about me and they were Team Billy, you know, like I knew that, but it didn't make me feel better. Like, I remember dating a girl and she saw my ex-wife at Starbucks or something. She sends me a text. I just saw your wonderful ex-wife or whatever. And I'm like, what makes you think that was going to help our relationship in any way? Like, that doesn't help me, you know? But that was also, I probably shouldn't have been dating yet at that time. I wasn't over it.
If you're feeling that way, right, Bill.
You know? But, I mean, there's still, the thing that's hard is I still have, and I deal with this in therapy, I still have anger towards both of my ex-wives. Stuff just comes up sometimes in my brain and it makes me feel, I still feel resentment or anger or, you know, I mean, it's not anything that boils. It's not, you know, it doesn't go crazy. Like, you know, obviously I kept the house, so I still, my ex-wife still gets mail here every once in a while because that's just, you know, what happens. So
that's the same.
Will come in the mail and I'll get kind of pissed off, you know, and it's not that I'm pissed off that mail came for her. I mean, the stuff that she put me through set me back. Because of all the dishonesty, because of all the shit, I could have been over this much quicker than I was, you know? And so I have some anger about that. I have resentment about that. And then,
what advice would you give to somebody that is, what advice would you give, you know, something I didn't do was reach out to people like you and say this, you're like, what advice do you give me in these moments?
Dealing with that anger?
Basically.
Well, the thing is at this point it's hard to say because I get a little bit angry about my anger.
Do you think therapy sounds like therapy has helped you?
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I talk about, I'm still working this out. I get a little bit angry about, you know, there's the, cliches has been a theme tonight, and there's that, you know, the anger or whatever is like eating poison and expecting the other person to die or whatever.
Right.
Well, there's a little bit of truth to that, but to say that that's 100% true is to kind of tell people they're not entitled to their anger, I feel like. And I feel like my anger is righteous. So the reason I get angry about it is that I want to be in a place where I feel no emotion whatsoever when something comes up. So I guess the advice I would give is what I'm learning is I don't think that really exists. I think that people may project that, maybe put it out that they have no feelings, that the person's name or an image of them or anything that's a reminder, because everything she put me through robbed me of every positive memory I had of my marriage. I have zero positive memories. Nothing from my second marriage that I look back on makes me smile. I don't have anything. I don't think of any moments ever. And so in a way, she did me a favor. Because if I continued to look back on those moments that made me smile, I don't think I would have let go. I wouldn't have been able to let go. And I had no choice but to let go. She left. What could I do? You know, she's a human being. I can't control her. You know, I mean, there's things, you go to jail for stuff like that. Like anything I could have done to make her stay would have put me in prison. So, you know, you can't do that stuff. And, you know, so I guess if I were to maybe give advice, I would say it's okay to have the anger. I would say embrace it, because it will help get you through some things. But at some point, you can't operate with the chip on your shoulder forever. You know, then it becomes a detriment. So you got your, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you think about like your family members dying and going to heaven and they're watching over you, right? If you believe that, how could somebody possibly be happy if they're watching over you from somewhere else? Then they're not a part of your life anymore. Like, how could that possibly, you know, be heaven? So like, it's kind of, it's like similar to that feeling. How could I possibly be happy now if all I have are these, if I'm watching from afar this stuff that used to make me happy all the time? Like it's almost like amnesia. Like I literally think about the times that were good, like things that we did and stuff, but I feel no happiness about it. Like I don't look back at it fondly. Like it was robbed from, I feel like it was robbed from me. So in a way, I mean, I came out of that feeling like I completely wasted 15 years of my life. Completely wasted them. And, you know, that obviously that's not reality. I mean, I learned plenty in that time. I changed plenty, a lot of things. I wouldn't be the man I am now if it weren't for those 15 years. I'm a much better boyfriend to my girlfriend than I would have been before. You know, there's definitely things that came out of it. I don't say any of that to say that I would trade it, because I wouldn't. And I think that anger and that robbing me of those memories in a way, because a lot of that just comes from other stuff. I mean, it's not just the marriage ending that robbed those memories. It's everything that made it end, you know? So
I do like your girlfriend a lot more than I like your ex-wife.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's the thing, man. When people talk to me all the time now about how fake she was, and I never saw that. And I obviously know now, but it was like, man, nobody said anything, and nobody could have. I would have.
Right. That's part of it. Right.
Yeah. You know, nobody could have said shit because I was. I assume this is... Oh, there's my girlfriend.
I'm glad that wasn't the ex-wife.
That's right. That's
she's right. Blocked.
Trust me, I'd have shown that comment too. I'd have shown that comment too.
She's blocked.
I don't know. In my case, you get better with the second one. That's all I know. So,
well, this is the third. Yeah. I mean, I shouldn't say third. I mean, it's my third like major relationship. Like right. I've only had between I was engaged when I was 19, which is just ignorant anyway, and you know that happened.
We've already covered that.
Yeah,
we heard that story.
And then I have my son's mom, and then I had my ex-wife. So that's literally the only serious relationships I've had. I mean, everything else was just, I don't know. I don't know what, trying to get my numbers up, I guess. I wanted to have a good body count.
Yeah, I knew that was word coming. I knew it.
I'm not settling down until my body count's over 100. Damn it.
I want to be cognizant of your time, Ross. Because I know you've got an early morning, and you've got the kids there. Which I would just like to pivot, if that's okay, and talk a little bit about. I don't know. I felt, and I said this earlier, I became a better dad afterwards, because I was more attentive to my kids and what they needed. And what helped me get past my hurt was I put all the passion that I had into my kids.
Amen. Okay. None of this stuff happens overnight, right? This is a slow burn that gets us to that point. I talk to friends. I've always been an open book. I'm an extremely vulnerable guy. When I was going through problems, I got two pieces of advice from divorced women. I was going through troubles, and I had some coworkers that popped in. They loved me. They were in that friend way, right? And one popped in and said, "Are you ready to get divorced?" And I said, "No." And she said, "Then don't. Because you will know. There won't be, if you're thinking about it, it's not time." And so if you are a guy out there or a girl that's listening and you're like, "Man, I don't know if this is the time," it's not. It's not. You will. You will wake up one day and go, "Oh my God, it's over."
Yep.
It's over. Man. The second piece of advice that I got during that time, Chris, goes to this thing about being a parent. One of these women said to me, "Here's something weird that will happen if you ever do get divorced. You will become so engaged with your kids. You will become so much more of an attentive parent, of a better parent, involved, whatever word you want to use for being there." And not physically.
No.
I was always physically there.
Yep.
But I was on my phone or I was working because there was another person there to help. There was and by the way, we both were doing that. We both were less than 50% of what we could have been. So combined, we weren't as good as one of us by ourselves. And I've noticed that, man. I'm proud of the dad I've always been. This last year, 10 to 1. Now, I'm being a more attentive dad does mean there's more discipline.
Yep.
So I think if Eli were up here right now, he'd tell you how mad he is at me that I've been threatening to take his phone away if he didn't clean his room and get his closet done. And that's the hard, fast rule. If we're done with this podcast and I go down there and his closet's not clean, his phone's getting taken away, his TV's getting moved out of his room, and the Xbox gets put away. And
does that work? Because it never worked for me.
That's the deal that's been made. I'll tell you, Chris, he's been down there churning and burning. So again, like, would Eli say that right now, would Eli say to you, "Oh, he's a better dad than he was"? No, he'd say he's a jerk. He's being mean to me. He's making me do all this stuff. Because for the first several years of his life, I was 40% of this dad.
Yeah.
And I would say, "Hey, clean your room." And then the next day I'd go, Hey, we clean your room." And then I'd go right back to my phone or whatever real estate deal I was working on. Now, when I pick the kids up from school, it's 5 o'clock. It's 5 o'clock. I'm a dad.
Yeah.
And I might get some phone calls and I might take some texts and emails and stuff like that for deals, but I'm a dad. And yeah. We're making plans to go to the art center and have what we're going to have for dinner. And then I've got laundry and dishes and all of the chores, right? So you everything's set up from the time I pick them up at 3 o'clock. Like, we're already making plans for spring break. We're going to do mini golfing and go hiking right. And try to go fishing and all sorts of fun stuff. All of those things were like, yeah, maybe someday. Tonight I went for a bike ride. I did laundry. I did dishes. I made pork loin. I made mac and cheese for Audrey. I went grocery shopping. Like, I did all, and now I'm doing, and did a podcast by 8 o'clock.
Right.
A year and a half ago, I would have chosen one of those things.
Yeah.
I did a bike ride tonight.
I'm still kind of like that. I can do one thing a day. No, but Chris, how old were you when you got divorced?
We got divorced in 2000. I was 37, 36.
Okay. And go ahead. Sorry.
That's all right. The kids were Taylor, who's Tyler now, was 14, 13, and Caitlin was 9. And I can tell you the night that we told the kids was the worst night of the entire time. True. Because I remember Caitlin just crying and saying, what are we going to do about family game night? And man, that just gutted me.
Sure.
Because that was the only thing she cared about.
Yep.
And then what happened when you told him it was their fault?
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, the oldest one doesn't talk to me very often. So I'm just kidding. But Ross, I will tell you it from a guy that now has a wonderful relationship with Caitlin, for example. We are best friends. She will tell me now how much she appreciated the hardship that I went through so that I could be a better dad. And those things like making mac and cheese and, you know, going for a bike ride or whatever. The big things they'll remember, but the important things are the things like, you sat down and you had, remember that time that we sat down at 8 o'clock at night and we had peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
We also did the science fair project tonight. I forgot about that.
Right.
Well, see, that's where I've talked about before how, and I know I've told you this, Ross, and
I love Gary.
I've told,
You know, Gary,
I worked out with Gary at Farrell's for a number of years,
but, great guy. This is where I'm jealous of my friends that had kids older. You know, my son's about to be 22. So, you know, that means I had him 22 years ago when I was 23. And it almost hurts to hear you guys talk about how much better a father you are now. Because I did not become a better father. That's probably my biggest regret. And I think the biggest part of that is age. Also, it was my second marriage. You know, my son was in kindergarten. My son was 5 when we moved in together. And you know, it wasn't good for him. And I was convinced that if I loved this woman in front of my son, it would be better for him. And, you know, and a lot of that was just, I think, in the end, kind of selfish. I think that I should have probably had the strength to move on earlier. I may have been. So I think I was probably less engaged than I would be now. I think that my son harbors some resentment. Like, we had an argument at one point. I don't know. It was over a year ago and he was like not talking to me. I think some of that was kind of him asserting his adulthood a little bit, like
sure.
Letting me know that he doesn't have to talk to me if he doesn't want to, you know? And we still, I've tried to address it again, you know, and he just doesn't want to talk about it. So, you know, that I was in a bad father. I mean, especially when the kids were young.
You weren't a bad dad, man.
No. I mean,
your son through Little League, you were there for all of that stuff. You've supported him. He is like you in that he has forged his own path in doing something that's extremely creative.
Yeah.
And a tiny percent of people,
have the balls.
How many conversations have you and I had about that thing of chasing your dream and trying to support each other through that thing of trying to do something that's not normal? Your kid is doing that same thing.
Absolutely. I spend a lot of time wondering if he hears my voice in his head ever, you know, like I always kind of feel like
I guarantee he does.
You know, now we have more of a friendship now that he's older, you know,
you're at that point. He's at that point in your life where you're both are, where being his friend is okay.
Yeah. And he's, you know, I think he still kind of feels a little bit of that. You know, he's still, which will probably last forever. I mean, you never stop being a dad, but I think he's still a little bit afraid to tell me stuff that might piss me off
all kids,
something along those lines. Yeah, you know,
all kids still do that.
But
man, did I just screw up? Holy cow.
What'd you do?
My coffee pot has been on since 5 a.m.
Oh my gosh.
What's it look like?
Wait, I thought you stopped at Starbucks every morning. I thought that's what I heard.
That's why.
No, I do this at I make coffee at home.
Oh my gosh.
You better get some ice cubes and some salt and go to town. That's why I don't drink coffee.
It's going to be a rough morning for you.
Yeah, it's going to be real rough. I'm going to be scraping a coffee pot here.
Dude, I'd be buying a new fucking coffee pot every week because if I drank coffee, because I would get stoned and forget about it every day. Everybody would come over and talk about their burnt ass coffee that I made.
I just heard it tick. We were sitting here and all of a sudden I heard my coffee pot tick. I'm like, that means it's on. That means the burner's been on all day. I left just enough coffee in the bottom to do that.
You can. That's salvageable though. I think
it is. This is not the first time. Ain't my first rodeo, dude.
I want to tell you guys. I won't say who this is, but I just got a direct message, and I think he said, "I love hearing you all talk about this. I didn't have anyone to talk to when it happened because they were married and only once. My ex had already been married before me. I think this was an important conversation to have. And again, Ross, I will just thank you a lot for coming on, for being so open, but for also always being supportive of us and me.
Yeah.
I appreciate it,
man.
Denny says, get a timer for that coffee pot.
Thanks, Denny. I'm an idiot.
Technology moves really fast. It probably doesn't cost that much at this point.
That thing that I would just the one cliche that I would repeat again that I've learned over and over and that I think can uplift a lot of people is that you're bigger than those problems, man. Life can be really hard and really, really heavy. And sometimes you are carrying 200 pounds of shit in a 2-pound box.
Yeah.
And you just do it. The only way to it is through it. Right. And you're stronger than you think. You've got more tools than you think. Sometimes you just gotta break that stuff, dude. The getting fired thing, you know, getting fired is what launched me into my real estate career, which has changed my life in so many amazing ways.
Yeah.
I saw a friend of mine post the other day that yesterday he posted that he had been, was one of the people that was going to be let go from Wells Fargo. He's basically given his 1-year notice that he's worked there for 27 years or something like that. I wish I could get that friend in a room with Andrew Downs.
Yeah.
And Andrew Downs, who would say, you will not know you have wings until you get pushed off the edge of the cliff.
That's right.
And you've been pushed off the edge of the cliff and you're falling right now. And that feeling sucks. You are going to spread those wings and feel that wind and go, whoa, I'm a different creature than I thought I was.
Well, and that's in a way, you know, again, you know, the jealousy of the older fathers, because I didn't have any money. That was the other thing. Like, not only did I not have any money, now I had a family of five when my son came over. How am I going to do that many fun things with this family of five? And then if I take my son, now I'm showing favoritism. Right. And yada, yada. I mean, it was just this constant dance. And I tried so hard to foster the type of environment that I grew up in. Like, my stepdad, I don't call him my stepdad. I have two dads. I have always had two dads. I've always said that. I call them both dad. They're both equally important.
Which is confusing when you're Bill's friend, by the way.
Yeah. But correct me if I'm wrong. You can almost tell by the tone of my voice how I say dad, which one I'm talking about.
Yeah. I won't say which one you talk nicer about.
Yeah. Neither, actually. But, I mean, I love them both equally. One of the funniest things that ever happened was that I was at a baseball game sitting with my dad and a friend of mine, my biological dad. And then my other dad showed up and was down by the dugout. We were watching my son play. So I got up and went and talked to him for a few minutes. And I came back, and my biological dad was like, where you been? I didn't even see where you went. And I was like, I was over there talking to the dad that hugged me every once in a while. We all just started cracking up laughing. That's the relationship we have. Like, it's all
Bill.
I had resistance all the time. I couldn't get that togetherness accomplished for a lot of different reasons. And I'm not saying that I don't have any fault in that, but that was my goal. That's what I wanted. And
Bill, I think you're too hard on yourself with a lot of this stuff, man. I really do. Like, watching you and knowing your family and your relationship with your son, I would say that you held on to those important things. You maintained all of that stuff that is important to us now in our mid 40s. And as we're racing towards 50, as we're racing towards 50, you've got those things. You've got that relationship with those two men that you call dad. You've got this relationship with your son that's the most important thing in your life, and it should have been, and it has been. You've shown that. So I really do think, man, you sometimes are just a little bit too hard on yourself, because I hear your story and I am inspired by it. Knowing the outcome, not hearing your take on it.
Right.
Knowing the outcome, I hear it and I go, this guy, that's the stream this guy swam up.
There's been many times after an episode of this that I've texted Bill, or a couple of days later, and I've texted Bill and I said, this is the best conversations that we have, and you bring so much out of me and at our friendship, because I think he has such a unique way of pulling things out, but also lightening the mood and whatever. Bill, you sell yourself short, and I'm not bullshitting here. You know, I've texted you several times and said,
sure. No. And I appreciate it. Honestly, it doesn't go in one ear and out the other. It's not like that at all. I think one of my superpowers and also one of my biggest weaknesses is my self-awareness. So I'm always wondering if I'm doing it right. You know, I remember I did the eulogy for my grandmother's funeral, you know, I don't know, 10 or more years ago, I'm trying to remember, but anyway, I volunteered to do that. And I was hesitant to volunteer because my whole life, you know, I've had my family tell me how I got to be the center of attention all the time. It's always about me and blah, 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 blah. So I was afraid to volunteer that. But I did it because I didn't want somebody that didn't know we're talking about her, and that was it. I didn't want her funeral to be a commercial for the church, and then find, you know, where the minister asks questions and find some stuff out about her, and you know, like, it's such a generic formulaic thing. I want somebody that'll go up there and speak from the heart, that loved this person, that really knew them. And I knew that I was the only one that would or could. So I volunteered it. And it's just, why should I feel bad about, you know, like, and obviously everybody was happy. Everybody was glad I did it. And everybody was, yes, please. But just that hesitation of even, because it's that self-awareness of, oh, these are the same people that have bitched at me about having to be the center of attention all the time. Right. And they're going to think that I'm making my grandma's funeral about me because I want attention. So how do you reconcile that? You know, how do you make sure that someone that she loves talks about her while at the same time not being the center of attention? So I think that's just kind of where it comes from. So I'm, you know, I think we all, as fathers, we all had things we were great at, things we weren't, you know. As a younger dad, I was the neighborhood toy. I was a stand-up comic. So when I was home, I was home. And in the summertime, I had baseball games in the front yard. The whole neighborhood was playing. I was pitching, you know. It got to the point where nobody would do anything unless I was playing. Like, these kids are, you know, between 6 and 10 years old. Nobody would do anything outside unless I was playing with them. So, like, there's all that. But, like Ross has all these activities planned, you know. Hey, spring break, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. And I can remember my son complaining that we never did anything. And I was like, fuck, I can't. Like, there's 5 of us. I don't have any money, you know. Because I was committed to being a stand-up comedian. Well, I was committed to showing him, you know.
You were there.
Yeah. I definitely wasn't absent.
Nope. 100%.
And I promise you, and Chris knows this too, when you are gone, that's what Billy's going to remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, we did this. My sister is a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And she does a lot of funerals. It's kind of mm-hmm. like her thing. It's one of her things that she's really good at.
Mm-hmm.
So that sounds weird, but you were at Sammy Allgaier's.
Sammy Allgaier's, yeah. And she was amazing. I'd never even seen her do a sermon or anything. I knew immediately that she was your sister as soon as the service started, but.
Yep. We did my mom's. My brother and myself did my mom's for all those same reasons that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I can promise you, man, that when you're gone, the only thing that you remember is they were there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which memory? No.
Yeah.
They were there. My mom's there in every one of those memories. And that's mm-hmm. That's what I've seen you with Billy. So.
And I do forget some, you know, it's funny. You're kind of giving me a little bit of perspective that I didn't think about. Like, he talks a lot about our, like, little league seasons.
Yes.
Like, yeah, like when we were, when yes. he was 9 and we went undefeated, he talks about that a yes. lot. And he talks yeah. about Salvation Army basketball a lot, like games we played and won. And like, and it's, you know, a lot of times we like, cause he'll hang out with me and my buddies and we kind of treat him like we treat each other a lot. And people be like, oh, gee, you're 9-year-old fucking man. But now that I'm thinking about it, that's probably his fondest stuff with me involved, you know, and
I
no doubt
obviously plenty of Iowa games and stuff, but
I can tell you for sure I've done stuff with the kids and we've went on trips and we've done this and whatever. When I'm gone, Caitlin's number one story about me will be the week that I had gotten diagnosed with cancer and I was in the hospital and she was sitting in bed and I didn't eat all my dinner and she said, Dad, can I eat your mac and cheese? And that's our joke now is that she's like, I don't even care when you had cancer. I ate your mac and cheese. It's a yeah. joke now. That will be what she will tell because that's a fun memory together. Ross, I know you got to get up in the morning and you got those kiddos to take care of.
One better be finished cleaning his
this damn could be, this right. could be.
Eli, you better have that room clean.
Just here's the thing, Chris. He's so big now he can kick my ass.
Oh, dude!
And he went to state in wrestling.
So right? Yeah. He's gonna be taken down.
Dude, don't let him around Rourke. You're gonna be fucked.
Oh, bad news, dude.
You know, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about your Courage Play Championship wheelchair basketball team that you got going on there. You, Apparently you smoked the We Will, guys. That's what Bill texted me and told me. So
I said, I'm sorry about what we did to your boys. And he goes, I don't have any boys. And I said,
Don't you though?
Yeah, I do.
I was like, they were dogging on us on Murph and Andy.
Again today.
They were what they say today. Because I had heard about it, and I wish I would have thought to say it on the radio, and I didn't. I said it on Twitter, but like literally it was the day of my grandpa's funeral, and I get a text from Willie that they were going hard at me. And so I called in without even knowing, and I meant to say, like, I literally just got done burying my grandfather, and this is what I come out. And oh my God, that's hilarious. Because, well, it's weird because we don't try that hard.
Yeah.
Like, we just play the game. Like, I don't know.
What are they out there to do, running like, around with his finger holding up like he won the? Like, it wasn't.
Siren noises
just crack me up.
I know I think there's people out there that think we're dead serious. I really do. Like, I think I learned this a long time ago. Like, you can't just do satire is hard. Like, when you're doing something satirical, a lot of people don't get it and they think it's 100% serious. Like, I did a show in Rockford, Illinois one time, and this was at least 15 years ago. And I got on stage, and the first thing I said, and this is where I learned this lesson, I said, it's good to be here in Rockford, home of the peaches. And I'm like, look, guys, I don't care what anybody says. You guys got hosed in the series. And I'm like, the point is, I was like, if Marla Hooch would have never ran off and got married, you guys would have pounded racing. And I'm like, and I know what you're all thinking. You're thinking, Marla Hooch not playing didn't cause Dottie to drop the ball. All I'm saying is, if Marla Hooch plays, it doesn't even come down to that. And it was fucking crickets. And I just said, note to self, never do anything satirical at a fucking small town one nighter. Just run. So that's what happens. Like, we actually, like, I called in to Murph and Andy and I'm bitching at him, you know, like, how dare you, like, downgrade him?
Well, I was lucky enough, Chris, that 7 years ago, Bill answered the call because we were asked to do this thing about 7 years ago. And
yeah, just banged it together.
We really did. I called Bill. I'm like, dude, you want to come play on this thing? I drug Eli to it when he was like,
My son played. He was 14. Like,
yeah. Billy kept putting his feet on the ground to shoot.
In fact, that was the only other game we won for a long time. We won the first game because my son had about 14. He was hitting like 15-foot jumpers for some reason. He just found the rhythm.
Because he was shooting jumpers.
He was getting actual air.
But then the next game, he didn't hit any shots, so we got smoked. But well, anyway,
that organization
been fun. Is amazing. Great.
Yeah, that kind of like Miracle League. My boys played Miracle League for several years. So, all right, guys, we're going to get off here. Thanks, Ross is rubbing his eyes. He's not going to have coffee in the morning.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to keep you up, man. This could easily turn into like the Joe Rogan show where we're doing 4 hours if Chris doesn't stop me.
Thanks for being my buddy, Bill, all these years. Mean it.
Oh, dude, you bet, man. You know I love you. And
yeah, love you too.
The love is strong. Chris, I love you too, buddy.
I love you too,
bro. You know, that's one of the things, you know, me and Ross have talked about that a lot. Normalize men, friends, telling each other they love each other.
I'm a hugger. I hug people. I tell my friends I love them.
Absolutely.
And
we'll even hug all the way. Like, we don't do the weird thing where we're afraid our dicks will touch or something. We like actually hug.
Full on.
Yeah. Full on hugs.
I'm telling you.
So about those divorces again.
All right. Yeah. Oh God.
All right. Yeah, love you all.
Thank you for the invite. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ross. I love these
conversations, man. This is what we're here for. I really do think that if we can help lighten the load for each other, because man, we're all carrying that 200 pounds of shit in the 2-pound box. And
yep.
if we can help each other out, and even if it's to laugh while we're carrying it around.
That's the point. That's the mission of the podcast. Yep. Have a good time talking about hard things. That's right. That's what we're here for.
All right, guys. Thanks for everybody for listening. We appreciate it. We appreciate the support to all of the Three Beards Media podcasts. Check out Ross on the KXNO Morning Rush and the Sound Off after Iowa games. And Billy, wherever stage he is, you got an event coming up on Tuesday on the 13th. Check out Bill Blank's Facebook page for more information about that. And with that, we are out of here.